Okay, it is Sunday, December 20th, 2015. It's about 11:35 a.m. and I'm at the beginning of a hike here. I don't much like this hike because the first 3 miles of it is a straightaway, a dusty straightaway. No shade, no water, really nothing. But mostly, all the dead vegetation around me, but mostly it's the lack of elevation gain that concerns me the most. I like to get straight into a steep incline so that I maximize the effort, the aerobic benefit of the activity. Time is, I don't have a lot of time, in my life, and for these, this type of recreation, and I need to make the most of it. And also, I'm a high vibration person. Anyone who knows me would attest to that. I'm, basically run twice as fast as, most everyone around me in terms of what I'm aware of. My intellectual observations, I'm just more than all there. And so the inclination here, or the lack thereof, what it does for me, it allows my body to match my psychic state. That is, if I have a steep hill to go up, I've got a lot of energy in me, and in order to ground it properly, I have to apply myself at a sufficient aerobic intensity for me to hit that steady state. It's one of the better descriptions of it that I can write, that I can share. I'm able to achieve homeostasis, and then I just hit this glide mode where, if I'm in the zone for a good hour or two, it carries. I can carry another 12 hours, 24 hours, where I'm just, I'm much more able to, my body mind is much more able to respond to, adapt to, deal with this life stresses, all the bullshit. There's a lot of it. Here's what I want to get to today. Again, this is a new thing for me. I have in my mind right now that this is not just an audio commentary for my benefit. I'm trying to think a little bit with an eye towards publishing this, like now. And so I'm going to try to, avoid naming certain names or, discussing certain things that wouldn't be appropriate or safe for me in my present state, in terms of, my ink, my line of work, family, et cetera. I just want to put it out there in a way that is going to be least likely to have negative repercussions for me. So, having said that, today, my little topic today is intentionality as it relates to tapas, sadhana, and spiritual practice in general. And the many challenges that those activities, that the many challenges that this world presents to those activities. So, intentionality. Well, what is that? You know, we have a body mind. You know, mind, body, whatever it is, this entity, on all the levels that it operates at, that seems to have as its apparent center, your body, your heart. As a function of being alive, there is I've described it before as a natural desiring function, but let's just call it an intention to become, or an intention to manifest. And that is, your activities in that area, or in that line, are a reflection of spirits or consciousnesses or graces, intention to manifest. So we see evolution, the progressive elevation of all life towards, increasingly complex and deep and powerful structures that over time reveal more and more of what is possible on the material plane. For me, as far as I can remember, I wake up motivated. And that is, motivated to make the most of my day, to achieve. And I think that's built into any healthy organism. It's survival instinct, but looking at Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, what that means in terms of aspirations or manifestations, or what is survival, the more the basic needs are met, then that motivation to be productive, it becomes increasingly subtle in its manifestation. And so for me, much of what, the building block for my say daily motivation is to harmonize my body and mind, or again to elevate this physical vehicle to some resonance level with spirit, or the degree to which spirit is present and in me. And that is realistic to demonstrate on a material level. And then, having accomplished that, then really the rest of my day is just gifts to the planet. It's kindness, it's creativity, it's compassion, it's generosity, it's happiness. It's fulfillment that I share in many, many ways with people. In sadhana, I don't have a book in front of me. I did take some classes in college in Hindu, Vedic, yogic philosophies. I might have had two. Upper level, undergraduate level. I didn't need to know any Sanskrit, or I didn't need to read that stuff. Although most of the terminology derives, or, you know, it is Sanskrit. But sadhana, I think, is just another word, the way I look at it. And I haven't researched this in years. It's a spiritual practice. I think it's probably normally associated with meditation. But, you know, I've read some Krishnamurti and a few other guys chiming in on this. And, you know, what is meditation? Well, you know, meditation can be your every life activity. You know, there are some people who've stated that, you know, you can, you know, tell whether or not someone's a saint or a guru or enlightened by just the manner in which they pick up a pencil. I don't know if that's the case, but what it points to is that your most basic trivial act under proper analysis is still a reflection of your manifestation of spirit. That is, we can read into or see an expression of the divine in our every action, or I guess lack thereof, or obstruction thereof, ignorance thereof. And so sadhana is your spiritual practice. It is, and so I guess it you know, to say that, you know, people doing all sorts of horrible things, you know, killing others, etc., you know, that their actions, I wouldn't call spiritual practice. You know, I think it's in order to really be called sadhana, I think you have to have a mindfulness regarding what is the intention of that activity. And so I guess, you know, on the individual level, what sadhana means is those activities, those practices or behaviors in your life that you consciously, on a conscious level, identify with as essential, critical elements of your spiritual practice, well, then that is your sadhana. So many things in our lives are perfunctory. We don't think about them. But once you start to think about them, then you, I suppose, you know, we could say you imbue them, or you raise those behaviors to a higher level, such that they become sadhana, your sadhana. So sadhana is what you make it. And it has to do with, well, where are we going? You know, I mean, anybody can have, I think there are as many sadhanas or spiritual practices out there as are human beings. You know, that is, it's innumerable, it's limitless. And the common ground that they all share, among other things, is for the elevation of one's vibrational state. I think that's critical. I think a lot of people would reject that, but, you know, me with Mr. Heart Chakra, Mr. Descending Kundalini, all that stuff, you know, the embodiment of Christ, blah, blah, blah. You know, we need to become embodiment. In order to embody grace, well, that body needs transformation. It needs to be healed, it needs to be elevated. And I can't say I have a complete understanding on what it, what elevation requires. But in my life, it's physical. It's aerobic activity. And I can't see how that wouldn't be the case for the majority of people. You know, whether you're swimming, playing tennis, or if you're, non-ambulatory, then, stomach crunches or whatever the heck you can do from your more limited state physically, then that's what you latch on to and you do. And you do it repetitively. And it strengthens the heart, which is a whole mystery chest of its own. And that endocrine gland, that muscle, it needs to be very, very strong. It needs to be a powerhouse, a workhorse, to withstand the pressures of successful sadhana. So, okay, so that's spiritual practice. And I'm getting a little self-conscious here because I am weak. I'm doing some of this because it's just the best I can do right now. I don't know what else to do. I'm grasping at straws. I do know that I find myself listening to a lot of radio interviews. I've been doing this with increasing intensity, for the last, let's say, 10 years. Well, that preceded that, but it's more my accessing the internet and listening to people. But there is something very special about the voice, the messages that it communicates, the meaning that it communicates, that dwarfs, far outstrips the potency of the written word. I can lie in bed for hours listening to certain people, and what they say has a much more transformative and deepened impact on me personally than were I to have simply read a transcript of their discourse. And so, I'm coming to mile marker two here. So that's 1 mile. So I do think that this is taking my message to another level, I think, initially. And, until I got weak with all of the, the mishaps and the setbacks that I encountered and that persist. I've just decided, hey, I need to put my voice out there too. It'd probably be even better to have my image shared as well, but I'm just not set up for that. I've seen some GoPro and these GoPro head cams, they don't have good audio. It's just beyond my comfort level technologically to do that. And again, I'm not in a position to share my message with my picture at this point. I need to retain my employment, be perceived as a normal human being in the workplace, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm just avoiding movie logs of myself right now. So, sadhana is your spiritual practice. Spiritual practice is whatever you consciously want it to be. And it's not just your consciousness that you imbue the activity with. Then there are this broader, let's say, natural laws that your behavior or your practice occurs in. And those have to do with relational understandings with others regarding kindness, patience, happiness, helpfulness. Your actions need to be helpful. They need to be kind. They need to be truthful. And what, you know, truth is, it varies, but in terms of what's appropriate to be shared. But basically, you need to be here to save all souls, to save people, to help them be free. And that is a whole nother can of worms. You know, I'm not gonna even. Not even gonna broach the whole concept of relational ethics. But basically, the summary of that is, life is not what you make it. Meaning is not what you make of it. There isn't a meaning that is true for others, and you, your meaning needs to be tied into, and at least part of, those other meanings. And then that's way too conceptual. I'm not into that either. You know, so meaning is not just a cognitive. There's an emotional, muscular, you know. Truth is a multi-transdimensional, transcendental reality. But you just can't, you know, I'm not into these. You know, I'm going to create my own reality and live in that. That's just that sort of selfish narcissism, denial of reality, greedy consciousness is just not true. It's harmful. Okay? And then there's tapas. And so I'll say that this hiking of mine is a part of my sadhana. It's essential to it, but there's a whole lot else involved in my sadhana. And I think the more inflexible. I mean, I think the more you learn, the more you know about what is true and what is right and what needs to be done, more of your life becomes a part of this, becomes a part of a sadhana. I mean, there's very little in my life that I engage in that has not been inspected and has not passed muster with respect to consciously entering my array of activities that are part of liberating me and liberating others. But tapas is specific, I think. I'm going to use it specifically. I believe tapas in Sanskrit has something to do with a spiritual practice that causes heat. Maybe it would be the heat of purification. And probably it's dominated by, hatha yoga type of activities. You know, I think, you know, again, I'm not a scholar in this area, but hatha yoga being kind of the yoga's physical vehicle. You know, there's more intellectual yoga. You know, yoga just, it means yoking yourself to a spiritual path. And there's intellectual dimensions of that. You know, and there's also physical practice dimensions of that. And so in hatha yoga, you get, you know, there are breathing exercises, physical exercises that are meant to generate heat or an intensification of consciousness in the body. But also, you know, with the focus on the physical. So this would tie in then to any aerobic activity that you approach with a spiritual intention to. You approach with a spiritual intention. And so, you know, my obsessions with two massive obstructions to my efforts at tapas, at generating purifying heat in my physical vehicle by which to radiate or transmit love more fully. In my life, the greatest obstacles to that are cellular tower transmissions and heavy metal and biological spraying of the atmosphere for a variety of things. I'm looking right now at multiple lines of aerosol sprays that have, you know, with earlier ones having spread out and formed a blanket over me. And I'm in a high desert area. This should be crystal blue 350 days a year with just a few good thunderstorms each year and then just billowy cumulus clouds that fly by once in a while, and we don't have that now. But in terms of intentionality, so I get to, you know, as you begin to look at the mountains in your area, you'll notice, you know, where you live, where you recreate, you will notice, you know, we're in year 2015 of, as my one religious studies professor of mine said, call it the common error. You know, that is supposed to be humorous. You know, an error that we are dating this era to a particular human being in history. His name is Mark Juergensmeyer. His specialty was nonviolent resolutions to conflict using Mahatma Gandhi's writings and activities as a guide. He wrote some books on that. If my intention is to elevate my body mind, to elevate my body so that it can harness or ground or sublimate and transmute increasingly more amounts of subtle energy, then I need to be applying myself to a physical, to an arduous, but not damaging, an arduous, continuous, aerobically demanding activity. Hopefully, you know, in a natural area, a safe area, you know, whatever, you know, so that you're not undermining yourself in any way, you're putting yourself at risk. And for a lot of people, that is mountains. You find yourself a tall mountain, hopefully with a footpath on it, and you go to it. And hopefully it's one of those mountains or hills where Yeah, there's a whole variety of them out there. Where you've got 500 feet, 1,000 feet, 2,000 feet, 5,000 feet of elevation gain that you do in a single day hike. You go up, you come down. And there's nothing in my life that I have found as rewarding as that. And when I was living in Honolulu, just my first couple of years there, two or three years, early 1990s, there was a fitness gym. I was a student at UH Manoa, the University of Hawaii, home of the rainbows, the bows. And I hadn't set upon mountains as objects for physical vehicles for physical release, because I had not become aware yet of EMF, toxic EMF. And I'm not sure, I was just there in that gym socially. Socially and psychologically, I found it damaging there. It was noisy, just a throng of people and mirrors everywhere. All the people's, their tight fittings. They're constantly looking over their shoulders at themselves. And it really, the place reeked of narcissism. And in terms of spiritual practice, if you're trying to elevate it to that, you might be able to, but there is an overarching, dominant vibration there of the purpose of exercise being to have a certain physical appearance or have a certain attractiveness, achieve a certain attractiveness for the opposite sex. So the point of the exercise was to fuck and to self-masturbate. I mean, in terms of just looking at yourself. And for me, and I don't know where this is a whole nother side trip, but my whole life, not to put myself on a pedestal, I was blessed to have a lot of good things happen to me in my life, but there was always an inner referent. And, that is an immersion in the activity, a sort of transcendent bonding with whatever it is I was doing. In a subsequent or associated kind of release from my personhood. I would just become immersed. And that was always, whether that was reading, or that was doing homework, or that was playing basketball or ping pong by myself for hours, or even tennis against a wall, I would just get into it. And but there were many times, playing pickup games of basketball where you are immersed. It's just, complete now kind of a thing, where you're playing a game and everyone is just, the whole court is just like a single heaving organism, just sweaty, pounding bodies. And that's just not the clanging, the news shows, the radio, the all the discordant conversations. I don't know what it was, but in this exercise gym in downtown Honolulu, I did not feel well there. I did not feel that it was healing for me. But then at the time also, because I lived at the rear of Manoa Valley, and you had the trade winds coming across, you know, 2,000 miles of travel across the Pacific Ocean. They hit Waimanalo and Kailua, and just for 2 or 3 miles maybe, I don't know how long, but and not a whole lot of development, to pass over land, and then they hit the Pales, which are these 3,000 foot tall cliffs, or tall razor sharp mountains that form the backbone of Oahu. And and then being oxygenated and salt kind of dropping off it a bit, then that air, that incredible air, just dropped down into Manoa Valley, and I was slurping it up. I was there to inhale and imbibe that. And so during those years, I was very concerned with air pollution, and I felt that I was at the top of basically a sewer, if you could see Honolulu as, you know, a source of toxins, because there was a lot of traffic there. Hang on, I'm getting a little tired. I'm going to pause.